Ditching Socialism in the New World, a Lesson for 21st Century Americans, by Governor William Bradford of the Plymouth Settlement, as presented primarily in his account of the Adventures of the Pilgrims, titled Of Plymouth Plantation, paraphrased by B. Nathaniel Sullivan and read by Micah Sample. The text of this work has been copyrighted in 2021 by B. Nathaniel Sullivan, all rights reserved. This audio presentation has been copyrighted in 2021 by Micah Sample and B. Nathaniel Sullivan, all rights reserved. To access this article online, please visit wordfoundations.com/Bradford Speaks. Dedication. This article is dedicated to the memory of Dr. D. James Kennedy, who lived from 1930 to 2007. Dr. Kennedy was the senior pastor of Coral Ridge Presbyterian Church in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, for 47 years. Although he was widely known for his emphasis on evangelism, Dr. Kennedy knew how to keep the main thing the main thing. He understood, as have very few pastors and Christian leaders, that socialism is an enemy of Christianity and the church that, unfortunately, is winning hearts and minds every day. Accordingly, Dr. Kennedy preached against socialism and other manifestations of Marxism with clarity and consistency throughout his ministry. Today, D. James Kennedy Ministries continues to warn people about socialism and upholds biblical teachings on economics, private property, and personal freedom. It is here in these very arenas that fierce spiritual battles continue to be waged. The need for pastors and Christian leaders to speak out as Dr. Kennedy did never has been greater. You're invited to visit wordfoundations.com/DJKM, where you'll be able to watch two excellent programs on socialism produced by D. James Kennedy Ministries. Ditching Socialism in the New World, a Lesson for 21st Century Americans, 1623. Our situation was dire, a matter of life and death. For 2 years we had sought to produce our food on the land we had found in the New World. Thankfully, we were able to forge an alliance with the Indian tribe nearby. Also, God gave us a special Indian friend in Squanto, who lived among us and helped us in ways we couldn't have imagined. Some background information might help you better understand our situation. Our congregation of believers left England and moved to Holland so we would be able to worship God freely. Then, after 11 or so years, we felt compelled to leave Holland because we were concerned about how the culture was affecting our children. We departed for the New World in 1620, and later in the year than we ideally would have due to circumstances beyond our control. Our arrival here came after a rough ocean crossing on the Mayflower. We landed at Cape Cod in the New World on November 11th, 1620. Before we even began to explore the land, we knew there was an important matter of business we had to address. We were keenly aware that chaos would erupt if we didn't live together in harmony, so we drafted what is now known as the Mayflower Compact. It was our statement that we would unite in one civil body politic and obey the laws that were enacted. Unity and harmony had to be preserved. If we didn't stick together, we wouldn't survive. Even with God's help, this wasn't going to be easy, not by a long shot. Remember, none of us had ever been here before, nor had anyone else we knew. We had no friends to welcome us, nor were there any hotels to check into so we could rest and recover from our difficult voyage across the ocean. Moreover, winter's cold winds and icy storms were about to bear down upon us. Not only that, but the land before us was more than unfamiliar. It was desolate and inhabited by wild animals and, quite probably, wild men as well. The winter of 1621 was especially cruel. Of our party of about 102, half died. My beloved wife, Dorothy, was one of the first. She was on the Mayflower and fell overboard into Provincetown Harbor on December 7th, 1620, before the start of the new year. But a great many of us grew sick and perished during the cold winter months. January and February were especially difficult. On some days, as many as two or three of our number passed into eternity. During the worst of it, only about six or seven were well enough to care for the sick and do necessary chores. Winter, however, did not last forever. When spring at last had arrived, God blessed us with an alliance with the neighboring Indians. One of them, Squanto, whom I mentioned earlier, became not just a friend, but also a brother. His tribe, which a few years before had occupied the very land on which our settlement now was rising, had been wiped out by a plague. Had Squanto not been kidnapped and taken to Europe, he too would have died. He was able to make it back to his home only to discover, when he arrived, that none of the members of his tribe had survived. We became his new family. Squanto helped and encouraged us greatly, but there was a problem that would plague us during the next 2 years. I come now to the heart of our story. A number of investors in London had financed our voyage to the New World. In turn, they required us to work for them 5 days out of each week. The remaining 2 days per week, we would be allowed to work for ourselves. After 7 years, all profits would be divided equally between us and them. During the 5 days we worked for them, all our resources had to be held in common. In other words, no private property. No one owned any land or resources of his own. Whatever our team of workers generated had to be put into a common store, and individuals would take what they needed for their livelihoods from that same pool. As I said, for 2 years we operated this way. We faced obstacle after obstacle. Those who worked did so begrudgingly, and many would offer excuse after excuse not to work at all. Here are some examples. The young unmarried men, those who were strongest and who had the most time and the greatest ability to produce, resented that they were, in effect, being made to work for other men's wives and children without any additional compensation. Whether strong or weak, everyone working, whether he did much or little, would wind up with the same amount of food and other resources as everyone else. If an individual worked a full 8 hours in a day and another worked only two, each received the same. Those carrying the greater load strongly believed this to be an extreme injustice. Can you blame them? Experience counted for nothing. The older men felt disrespected by those who were younger. Under the communal arrangement, the wives had to cook and do laundry for anyone and everyone, not just their own husbands and families. This angered the husbands who, along with their wives, felt it was a form of slavery. All of this was bad enough, but I'm convinced it would have been a lot worse if we hated each other. No one in our congregation was perfect, not by a long shot. Still, we were a people who had common goals and who sincerely wanted everyone among us to have the best. Our company had more than its share of honest and decent men and women. Sharing resources sounds so compassionate and compelling. It has a great emotional appeal. Operating this way, however, set us at one another's throats. It bred resentment, disrespect, ill will, selfishness, envy, and greed. It was a dead end that would have killed us all. On reflection, I have become convinced that it wasn't our fault that this plan didn't work. It didn't work, and it doesn't work, because it is a faulty plan. The communal system, which today is often called socialism, does not fit human nature, and it will fail wherever and whenever it is tried. Few things in this life are more certain. Philosophers like Plato called for this kind of communal system, and Plato's call for it foreshadowed the thinking and writings of Karl Marx later on. Yet this plan works only in socialists' minds. Oh, some may sincerely believe that eliminating private property and putting the state in charge of producing and managing everything will create a utopia, but it never will. This idea is a complete fantasy. Socialists actually are pretending to be wiser than God. We are grateful that God showed us a better way. We knew we couldn't continue on as we had. Had we done so, all of us would have starved to death. We discussed it thoroughly among ourselves, considering all our options. In the end, we decided that I, as governor, taking into account the advice given by the other leaders among us, would assign a tract of land to each family. Each one, in turn, would be responsible to plant corn and other crops for themselves. In other words, we ditched the communal system. Our investors simply would have to live with that. What kind of return on their investments would they receive if all of us had starved? We traded the failed system for one that emphasized the benefits of private property and the responsibilities of the owner or owners to effectively manage the resources in his or their charge. As we assigned the land, we were mindful that larger families would need more resources, so we made our decisions accordingly. We weren't thinking about inheritance or other future matters, but mainly about immediate needs. Children who had been orphaned and other single individuals were assigned to families, and so management of work responsibilities would belong strictly to each family unit. Also, and this is key, so would the crops they produced. In this way, laziness naturally would be penalized and hard work rewarded. The change was remarkable and immediate. Whereas before the men in our company had looked for excuses not to work and had complained when they did, they now labored willingly and eagerly. More corn was planted than would have been under any other system I or anyone else could have devised. It wasn't just the men either. Wives and children also worked in the fields, and they apparently wanted to. Before we adopted this system, urging a woman to till the ground and plant corn was thought to be oppressive and mean. There's more. Thanks for your patience as I explain even further. Be assured, though, I'm almost done. In November of 1621, the ship Fortune arrived with about 35 new colonists. The ship brought us mouths to feed, but no supplies, and our rations were cut in half. It wasn't that we wished hardship on anybody, but the additional needs among us made our task even more challenging. So it's easy to see how the arrival of new colonists made us wary. We limped along as best we could until 1623, when we established private property rights and the free market system I've described. Soon after we changed our approach, around July and August of that same year, 100 new colonists arrived on two ships, the Anne and Little James. We wanted them to feel welcome, but it quickly became apparent we needed to clarify some matters with them so no unnecessary misunderstandings would occur. The settlers who had been around from the beginning worried that when the corn they'd planted ripened, the new members of the colony would expect they would be entitled to some. With so many mouths to feed, there wouldn't be enough corn to go around. As I indicated, we'd already adopted the new system, and those who had worked hard to plant their corn had done so with the understanding that what they harvested would be theirs to enjoy. They preferred to eat the crops they had planted, as opposed to being fed from any of the food supplies the ships delivered. So, we reached an agreement. The new arrivals would use the food that had come over with them, and the early members of the colony wouldn't have access to it, except that for which they bargained, or the food they purchased. This put everyone's mind at ease. You see, it wasn't just the old-timers who were worried. The new arrivals actually had been afraid their food would be devoured by the settlers who had been around for a while. Isn't it interesting how all of us tend to view others, even friends and potential friends, with a mutual kind of skepticism? A note from the editor. Don't let this section mislead you. This incident doesn't indicate a free market system breeds selfishness. Not at all. The tendencies to look out for oneself and to view others skeptically are natural. But the other side of the same coin is that with enough to go around, generosity can be encouraged and joyfully practiced. When a person has worked hard to meet his own needs and has a surplus, and when he experiences the satisfaction of hard work and the fruit of his labor, he is free to think about others and to give of his own resources to help them and to meet their needs. As Paul wrote in Ephesians 4:28, "Let him who stole steal no longer, but rather let him labor, working with his hands what is good, that he may have something to give him who has need. After the newcomers joined us, it wasn't that long until it was time to harvest our crops. We reaped a bountiful harvest that year, certainly because God had been good to us, but also because the members of the colony had worked hard in both planting and harvesting. In fact, we enjoyed more than enough. Some members of the colony even were able to benefit others because they had enough to sell. Also, through their transactions, they managed to benefit themselves as well by making a profit. Having worked hard, they deserved it. With God's help, we had turned a corner. We knew we had much for which to be grateful, and we celebrated that year, thanking God for all His abundant blessings. Despite the hardships of the past, and despite other hardships that were yet to come, the future looked bright. A new day had dawned. I shudder to think what would have become of us if we hadn't ditched socialism. William Bradford, Governor of the Plymouth Colony. Epilogue. The events at Plymouth actually represent the second time in the New World that proves socialism does not work. The settlers at Jamestown had an experience similar to the Pilgrims. Read historian and sociologist Alvin J. Schmidt's summary of what happened at Jamestown and Plymouth, and the implications of both, at wordfoundations.com/Jamestown also. Learn more. To access a 6-session Bible study series titled Principles of Economic Liberty, The Biblical Case for Free Enterprise, visit discoverbedrocktruth.org/free-market-bible-study. In addition, you're invited to visit a page offering 3 or more articles for you to read and enjoy. 2 of them further examine the experiences of the Pilgrims and offer additional lessons for us as 21st century Americans. Another explores what America's founding fathers believed about biblical principles addressing Marxism and about the teachings of Marxism itself. You'll find all of these, as well as Ditching Socialism in the New World, an online edition of the audio presentation you've just heard, at wordfoundations.com/heedthepilgrims. Unless otherwise indicated, scripture quotations in this article have been taken from the New King James Version, copyright 1982, by Thomas Nelson, Incorporated. Used by permission. All rights reserved. This audio presentation has been a production of Faith Baptist Church in Hudson, Iowa, wordfoundations.com, and discoverbedrocktruth.org. I'm Micah Sample. Thank you for listening.